Good morning, Packer fans. This is the Railbird Central Talk Show on CheeseheadTV.com. Thank you for joining me this morning. Got a lot to get to today. It is Tuesday, October 12th, 2010. Joining us later during the show is recruiting analyst Jerry McCoon, West Coast College recruiting analyst. He's got some Packer stories to share with us, and I guarantee most of them you probably haven't heard before, and it should be interesting. So we welcome Jerry at about 8:30 a.m. Lambeau time this morning. Until that point, we're talking Packers news, and there is a lot to get to today, especially in terms of injuries. If you go on the live blog to the top, there's a link for the Packers Daily Links. Please click on that link. It is our roadmap for today's show. Also, while you're checking out the live blog, just remember that our chat is moderated entirely by Twitter. Please tweet with the hashtags Railbird or hashtags CheeseheadTV, and your comments will get through to the show. I welcome them. Giving you something to comment on. Top story today in the Packers Daily Links. Matt Flynn ready if called upon. Here's today's Packers Daily Links at Cheesehead TV. You can see the top story here is about Matt Flynn. If you click this link right here, it'll bring you to PackerReport.com and reporter Bill Huber's article about Matt Flynn possibly taking over the reins this weekend as the starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, possibly getting his first NFL start. If I can just read briefly here, the little quote I found interesting from Huber. He writes, quote, quarterbacks coach Tom Clements estimates that Flynn takes about 10% of the offense's reps during a normal week, though with his work in individual drills and running the opponent's offense against the Packers' defense, rust shouldn't be an issue. I've always kind of wondered how many snaps Matt Flynn gets with the first string offense of the Packers. I mean, I think we all realize Aaron Rodgers is getting the large bulk of the snaps throughout practice all week. But, of course, you always have to be a little bit prepared. And you have to give Matt Flynn a little bit of work. Get his timing down with the first string. Let him work with those guys a little bit, get comfortable, just in case. And that just in case scenario might be happening this Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. Aaron Rodgers has a concussion, suffered in the last offensive play of the game against the Washington Redskins when Jeremy Jarman hit him head on. On the play that Rodgers threw an interception. So, on the live blog, Hegermania writes, I'm going to have to say I'll be surprised if it comes down to Flynn. Correct. From all the indications that I've gotten, that I've seen, that I've heard, it doesn't sound like Aaron Rodgers suffered a serious concussion. A serious head injury. He seemed to be very lucid. Everybody from Flynn to quarterbacks coach Tom Clements' comments make it seem like Rodgers was pretty much fine. But that doesn't guarantee he's going to play on Sunday. Which brings us to the second article in today's Packers Daily Links. Scrolling down, Rob Domofsky of the Green Bay Press Gazette has an article with a little more information about what it'll take for Aaron Rodgers to play. If you click this link right here, it'll take you to this article at the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. Has more about the rules that it takes back to come back in the NFL. And certainly other Packers have had to follow this as well. If I'm correct, Brady Papinga suffered a concussion in the preseason. I believe Jarius Wynn did so as well. So nothing new here. But yes, if I could just read this quote here, or this paragraph from Rob Domofsky, and I'll share it with you and tell you a little bit more about what might happen throughout the course of this week with Aaron Rodgers. It says, quote, under the NFL's new policy on concussions, Rodgers will have to pass examinations from the Packers' doctor and independent physician not affiliated with the team in order to return to action. Under the policy, all players underwent baseline testing before the season. When a player sustains a concussion, he must demonstrate the same level of neurological functioning as the baseline test in order to be cleared. So that's what's going to happen throughout the course of this week. Very possible that Aaron Rodgers already went through some of this testing. I don't know. I'm not in Packer headquarters. I can't confirm that he did. It's possible. Might happen throughout the week. Just to err on the side of caution, it's possible the Packers will be giving Matt Flynn a lot more practice time this week. Maybe especially on the first day they get back to practice, Wednesday, tomorrow. They'll have some time set aside for Matt Flynn to guide the offense. It's possible Rodgers might not even be back by then, by Wednesday, by tomorrow. So Flynn might get all the work, like it or not. So, the question I leave to Packer Nation is, what do you think about Matt Flynn possibly being the starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers this upcoming Sunday at Lambeau Field against the Miami Dolphins? Do you trust him? Do you trust the offense in his hands? Even if he was healthy, could Matt Flynn get it done because of the other injury issues on the team? Doesn't look like tight ends JerMichael Finley and Donald Lee will be out there. Maybe without the services of right tackle Mark Tauscher once again. Although some people might argue that's a good thing. Not so much because Mark Tauscher would do poorly, although he's been poorly on certain plays this year. But because Brian Bulaga has performed admirably. Brian Bulaga did well for the most part this past week. He did give up a sack, it appeared. Had two false start penalties. Those definitely have to stop. You know, multiple penalties especially. You can maybe live with one, and you don't want one every week even. It's almost like you can live with one every other week. I mean, they're going to happen. You just can't expect penalties to stop completely. But I digress. We're talking about Matt Flynn, and we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, and this upcoming week. And leading the offense, leading the Green Bay Packers as they take on the Miami Dolphins. I've opened up the phone lines if you want to call. I'm not sure we'll have a whole lot of time for phone calls in the second segment of today's show when we have recruiting analyst Jerry McCoon on. So if you want to chime in, now's the time, sometime in the first half hour of the show here until 8:30. Phone number 646-797-2909. I believe it's also up on the screen if you want to call in and share what you're thinking in regards to the quarterback situation or anything going on with the Green Bay Packers, the injury situation in general. Packer fan John writes on the live blog, "What does Rodgers have to do to get a helmet-to-helmet flag? Sunday's hit was blatantly obvious." He does seem to have a hard time getting any penalties, whether it's helmet to helmet or face mask or anything like that. Aaron Rodgers has seemed to have a string of bad luck. It's just the way it works. He's not getting these calls. And the Packers got to be going nuts over it. Every week, Mike McCarthy goes into his press conference and says, we send our thoughts to the league office, basically regarding officials and penalties and things like that. You have to think that was part of it. Although Jeremy Jarman did try to let up a little bit, but still, regardless, there was helmet-to-helmet contact, even though it wasn't the worst hit ever. And it wasn't with the malicious intent by Jarman. But still, it's been called on other quarterbacks. And for whatever reason, it hasn't been called for the Packers. Hegermania on the live blog writes, "If Flynn starts, Mike McCarthy had better give us a running game. B-Jack showed up finally. Brandon Jackson had a fantastic game on Sunday. Certainly his best game this year. Arguably the best game of his professional career with the Packers. 115 yards, I believe. Of course, the long 71-yard run being the most memorable of them." And then Hegermania writes, "Clay Matthews got flagged for less." He has, that's for sure. There's been penalties for far less offenses that we've seen. Dane Shuda brings us back to reality. "You'll wear yourself out worrying about officiating. Gotta play the game." True. I've been on top of that as far as complaining to the officials in the past. I wish I wouldn't see that so much. It bothers me a little bit how much Charles Woodson complains about officiating. Unfortunately, he was guilty of pass interference in overtime that set up the game-winning field goal by Graham Gano against the Redskins. The previous week, he complained about officiating in general in the pass interference call against Morgan Burnett. Or was that the Bears game? That was the Chicago Bears game. But openly critical of officials, I don't like to see it. I personally thought that was a penalty as well. I can see both sides of the argument if we're going back, you know, 2-3 games here on that Chicago Bears call against Morgan Burnett pass interference. But Anyhow, Hagermania says Adam Schein called us an undisciplined team yesterday. Had to agree. Adam Schein on Sirius NFL Radio. I'd have to agree, too. I mean, just as far as penalties go, that's the history with the Green Bay Packers under Mike McCarthy, and they just can't shake it. I've talked about that at length on previous shows, that I disagree with McCarthy. Not disagree, but, you know, I've been critical of him not harping on it more and almost creating a culture where it's okay to have penalties when it shouldn't be. I'd like to see him get more verbal. I'd like to see him show a little more agitation on the sideline when there's penalties. Nobody wants to come to the sideline and talk to the coach about a penalty. I mean, it doesn't even have to be. He doesn't have to rip on him. He doesn't have to yell at him. But just put that little reminder in them that penalties are not okay. That's all I want. Just a little reminder. Just to get under the skin of the player just the tiniest bit to make them play a little bit smarter on the field, a little more disciplined. That's what I want to see out of the Packers and head coach Mike McCarthy. I think that would make them a better team. Dean Shooter writes, if Flynn starts, I want Mike McCarthy to air it out all day. Of course, the team's been roundly criticized this past week after the loss when the running game was working for abandoning the run game. They just want to air it out all day. Would you expect anything different from the Packers if Matt Flynn was the quarterback? Would he? Would the game plan change at all? I forget what article it is. I think it was in Rob Domofsky's today. Somebody actually asked offensive coordinator Joe Philbin if the game plan would change anything because Matt Flynn would have to play. And he said basically that Matt Flynn is much better prepared than he was, you know, as a rookie 2 years ago. So, you know, they didn't really answer the question so much. I would assume that Matt Flynn knows this offense pretty well, in that there might be plays that, you know, he may not know as well as Aaron Rodgers, and they might not call those plays, but I think there's still a whole lot of offense Matt Flynn does know, just from practice to preseason and training camp and off season and you name it, the Mike McCarthy's quarterback school. Matt Flynn knows the offense, and I think he can run any play they throw at him pretty much. But it would certainly get the notice of observers and the media if the Packers changed courses for whatever reason and all of a sudden went to more of a ground game. Of course, people would automatically say it's because Matt Flynn's the quarterback that they went to more of a ground game, more so than any other reason, I'm sure. I can see that already if that happens this Sunday. Digital Man, how do I get my copy of Maple Street Packers? It will be worth more on eBay. Not sure if there's any copies of Maple Street press Packers Annual on eBay. But if you are seriously interested, just go to maplestreetpress.com. Very easy to order. Everybody I've talked to was always impressed with how fast it shipped, actually. Had some fans like out on the West Coast and even a few overseas who were impressed how quickly it got out to them. But anyway. In other Packers news and other injury news, the third story down on today's Packers Daily Links, surgery is needed for two Packers. Clicking the link here brings you to an article by Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And he writes about surgeries for two players. Those two players are, quote, Jermichael Finley and linebacker Nick Barnett are headed for surgery. Finley on Tuesday morning and Barnett on Wednesday. McCarthy wouldn't divulge much about Finley, but an NFL source said the tight end tore meniscus cartilage in his right knee and would have it repaired arthroscopically. So, Nick Barnett and Jermichael Finley both having surgery. Finley out, as the reports say, 3 to 6 weeks. I have no clue where in those 3 to 6 weeks he'll fall. Nick Barnett, meanwhile, out 8 weeks is the word. And that brings up a good point. What are they going to decide to do with Nick Barnett? And before we break here at 8:30 to talk to Jerry McCoon, I just want to get to one last article here in today's Daily Links, another one from Rob Domofsky, actually, where he actually wonders if the Packers will need to make some roster moves because of all these injuries. And this would be the article at PackersNews.com from Rob Domofsky. What he says is this. Quote, at 3-2, with a challenging schedule awaiting, the Packers may need to make some roster moves this week because it's unknown when several other players will be available. The other injured players are safety Derek Martin with knee, tackle Mark Tauscher shoulder, linebacker Brandon Chiller shoulder, cornerback Sam Shields calf, and fullback Quinn Johnson glute. Martin was injured against the Redskins and is expected to miss several weeks, while the others sat out against Washington because of previous injuries. So about roster moves. The thing is the Packers have some tough, tough choices here because of the severity of the injuries, or lack of severity maybe, in that none of them really seems to be season-ending in that they all could come back, some earlier than others. Who will be the people that get put on injured reserve? You've got to think that Nick Barnett would go on injured reserve, and I'm thinking it's coming sooner rather than later. Why do I think that? First of all, they made that decision with Ryan Grant week one. Ryan Grant possibly could have had surgery and come back late in the season. They weren't willing to use up his roster spot all season long waiting for him. So I'm not sure the Packers will do the same or do any differently, I mean, with Nick Barnett. Second of all, Nick Barnett left a very cryptic tweet yesterday on Twitter in which he just put a little frowny face. And he hasn't even had surgery yet. And the Packers have said they'll determine the length he's out after his surgery, because they really think the doctors need to get in there and see it in order to determine those kind of things. But you have to wonder if Nick Barnett's been told, we just can't wait for you that long. We've got injuries everywhere on this team, and we need that roster spot, and we can't afford to just keep guys on the sidelines. So Nick Barnett is one candidate. I think the other most likely candidate could be Derek Martin, special teamer and safety. If he too is out somewhere in the realm of 8 weeks, you gotta wonder if they can wait for him. I know he's pretty good on special teams. I actually wonder if Derek Martin is actually maybe a little overrated on special teams. At least from what I've seen of him this year, he's made some mistakes. And most of them are out of aggression, which is a good thing. They're not mental errors, but mistakes nonetheless. But I just wonder if they can wait for a guy like Derek Martin, who's really not a starter on defense. They might just end his season as well. And we are still awaiting word on Ryan Pickett, defensive tackle, defensive end Ryan Pickett, how long he'll be out. Can they wait for him 8 weeks as well, if that's what it takes? Now, he has an ankle sprain and nothing seems to be torn, but ankle sprains can be debilitating. You know, he could be out a month, and even when he comes back, he still won't be up to full speed. Of course, defensive lineman is one position where you don't need a whole lot of speed. So, thank goodness for that. And he's never going to be the type of guy who's going to need even any sort of speed to get after the quarterback. Or at least very, very rarely. You know, he's in there to stuff the run and gobble up blockers. So, I suppose you could think of it as being hopeful in that regard. Dane Shooter writes on the live blog, today is the day Ted Thompson signs some guys you've never heard of and they'll most likely contribute on Sunday. Very possible he signs somebody off the street. You'd think if they're going to replace Derek Martin, they would sign Anthony Levine or Levine off the practice squad. And they're already thin at safety. You know, Jared Bush is really a cornerback who's filling in at safety for them. So, I know Atari Bigby's coming back, but there's no guarantee he's going to be back, you know, next week. So, they can't bank on that. So I would think, you know, one person would be Anthony Levine off your practice squad. As far as other positions go, you know, they already brought up Maurice Simpkins at linebacker last week, so I think they're okay at the depth at linebacker right now. I'd like to see them look at somebody at outside linebacker. Simpkins mainly is your inside guy. I'd really like to see him give somebody a shot at outside linebacker, just because that's one of the positions with the least depth on the entire team. It's 8:30, folks. Going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have college recruiting analyst Jerry McCoon on the line. Talk to him about some stories. Welcome back to the Railbird Central Green Bay Packers talk show here on CheeseheadTV.com. With me on the phone right now is Jerry McCoon, college recruiting analyst on the West Coast. Jerry, how are you this morning?
I'm great, Brian. How are you?
Very good. I appreciate you. It is very early on the West Coast, 6:30 a.m., so I appreciate it greatly that you're waking up at this early hour to join us. Thank you.
Not a problem.
So, Jerry, you've done some recruiting for Fresno State, and I understand Packers linebacker Clay Matthews was on the radar of the Bulldogs at one time. Can you tell us more about that? You know, we're obviously interested about Clay Matthews here in Green Bay.
Sure. Yeah, I started doing some outside scouting for Fresno State back in the early 90s, and or around the mid-90s, about the time Pat Hill took over. Real interesting guy, and he's a guy that has a lot of connections in the NFL. I mean, he was off of Belichick's staff. He coached with Nick Saban, coached with Kirk Ferentz. So his NFL ties run deep, and one of the relationships he had was with Clay Matthews II, Clay's father, from his brief time in Cleveland when their paths crossed. I remember it was around 2003, and I was in the office, and he said, "Hey, I want you to come take a look at this kid here and tell me what you think." And he pops the film in from Agoura High School, and, you know, there's this guy, he's about, you know, a shade over 6 feet tall, not even 200 pounds, and he's, just flying around like a madman. And I initially thought they were looking at him as a safety, and he said, "Well, you know, I'm thinking maybe a Willie linebacker." And I said, "Oh, who is it?" And he said, it's Clay Matthews." And I said, "Well, that name sounds familiar." He said, "Yeah, it's Clay's son. I know him from my time in the NFL in Cleveland, and he's a good guy, and he doesn't have anything going, really. I mean, Idaho wants him, but, no one else is offering him. I'm thinking, maybe I'm going to offer him as a gray shirt or at the very least as a walk-on," but he was looking at more of a gray shirt scenario, which is where you offer a kid a scholarship, but they don't enroll right away. They actually take the fall off. They enroll in the spring, and it actually starts their NCAA clock later, and it gives kids a time to get a little bit stronger, maybe hit the weight room, or if a kid's young, if he's 17 or sometimes even 16 when they graduate high school, it gives them an extra year. They like to do a quarterback. So, Clay was a guy that was definitely on their radar because of his motor. I mean, you could tell he was undersized, but the guy played with great passion. And by the time he made the contact with Clay's dad, Clay had already decided to walk on at SC. And that was a scenario, too, where, there was nothing to lose. I mean, it wasn't like they needed the scholarship. The Matthews family has done well for themselves financially, and so they could pay for Clay's tuition at SC for him to walk on. I knew way back when. I mean, I didn't imagine he'd be a first-round NFL draft pick, but I knew he was what Coach Hill liked to call a high-motor guy. And that was obvious from what he did at SC.
He's certainly been all that and more with the Packers, a high-motor guy. Can you speak a little bit to how he was undersized? Everybody here who knows anything about Clay Matthews knows the story about how he was, about 180 pounds dripping wet in high school and, went on to add all this bulk. There's been accusations about steroids, but nothing proven. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, when you're looking at a kid, and you got to take things into account, like they're, how old they are when you're looking at the film, and when you're recruiting them, you try and get a look at mom and dad, and you look at things like the width of their shoulder and the length of their arms. You look at, are they 165 pounds, but do they have a big frame? Can they carry more weight? You refer to it as the ceiling. Do they have a high ceiling in terms of, weight gain and stuff like that? And even though, Clay was a slight guy, he played big. I mean, if that makes sense, he just wasn't afraid to hit. You knew when he was laying a hit, even if the guy was 50 pounds heavier, he was feeling it. And so, looking at him and knowing that the Matthews family were late developers, guys that, didn't get bigger until they're 19, 20 years old. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, young men can, you know, can keep growing, you know, into 24, 25 years old. I mean, they can still be physically maturing, and Clay was one of those guys that didn't really start his adult maturation process until probably 19 or 20. So when you're looking at him, you see that, hey, you know, he definitely has that upside. If he hits the weight room, gets some right nutrition, and, you know, you're going to do what you can. And then once his body kicks in, his, you know, metabolism catches up, he's going to, you know, be a guy that, you know, physically matures for you. And, you know, you also have to take into account, you know, who his parents are. And, you know, the one thing that I know of the Matthews family is that, you know, the highest character possible. You wouldn't expect, any of those guys to dabble with anything that was illegal or any steroids, you know, just because the shame that would come on them for doing that. I mean, you know, the father and uncle didn't need to do that. And you don't play in the league 19 years apiece if you're doing steroids. It just doesn't happen. It takes its toll on your body. It breaks muscles down. It affects your liver. It affects your kidneys. So it was quite obvious that, you know, if he was true to his bloodlines, he wasn't going to need the juice to get up to where he needed to be. And you know, I mean, it would shock me greater than you could ever imagine if anyone ever found out that he was doing something other than, you know, standard legal supplements, muscle milk, protein builders, things like that. So, you know, but I mean, I can definitely see the concern, especially, you know, coming from a program like SE that, you know, reputation wise is, you know, kind of right there with, well, maybe we're going to do whatever it takes to win, but not Clay.
That's some great analysis, Jerry, you know, saying about both his, you know, his father, his grandfather, and that played, you know, 19 years in the NFL, and you just don't do that if you're doing steroids. So, you know, that's certainly one great thing to point out. Jerry, you've gotten to, just throughout your ties on the West Coast, you've gotten to know Cal coach Jeff Tedford, who we know as Aaron Rodgers, coach at Cal. Can you take us back to the time he was recruited by Cal?
I got to know Jeff and you know, his time in Fresno. I mean, he actually played quarterback at Fresno State back in the 80s, and he was offensive coordinator at Fresno State for Jim Sweeney for a lot of years, and then he was offensive coordinator under Pat Hill in his first year, and then, you know, that's when I got to know Jeff, and you know, he's just a guy that, you know, I mean, he takes a lot of heat, you know, for not putting NFL-ready quarterbacks out there. And you know, he's had his hands, you know, on a lot of guys that, you know, may not have had great NFL stardom, but, you know, have had a lot of success. I mean, you're talking about Billy Volek, who's been a very successful backup. You're talking about Trent Dilfer, who, you know, say what you want about him, the guy won a Super Bowl. You know, David Carr, I mean, he's had his ups and downs, and you know, I'm certainly he's had his failures with Achilles Smith and you know, Joey Harrington. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers was a guy that, you know, he wasn't even on Jeff's radar, and Jeff came to town for a junior college game. Aaron's, you know, junior college, Butte College, from way up in Northern California, was playing Fresno City College, and they came down, and I forget the guy's name. He was a tight end that Jeff was looking at Butte College, and he ended up going to Cal, and he actually ended up being a free agent with the Packers for a while. But I remember I was talking to Jeff. He was up on the home side at the very top, watching, you know, the tight end, and he just couldn't say enough about Aaron Rodgers and his ability to deliver the ball and you know, the release, and it's one of the things that a lot of people talk about, arm strength versus release, and you know, you look at someone like Brett Favre, who just has a tremendous, you know, arm strength. He can get the ball out, but the, you know, the one thing that Aaron Rodgers has that guys like Dan Marino and John Elway had is they have that release, and you know, he gets the ball out so much quicker than almost every other quarterback in the NFL. It's quite amazing, and that was the one thing that stood out to Jeff at the time was, hey, you know what, this kid, I mean, if I coach him up, give him some, you know, some pointers, work on his mechanics, he's got that release that is just, you can't coach that. And you know, that was sort of when the first sort of the relationship began, and the last thing he said to me was, I got to get more film on this kid. I think he's the real deal. And he didn't really have anything going. I mean, he was not a highly recruited guy out of high school. He wasn't a highly recruited guy out of Butte College. And Jeff went and got him and turned him into a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, we've heard that story many times here in Green Bay. I think ESPN, the magazine, had detailed it. But it's interesting getting it from somebody who has firsthand knowledge, was there when Jeff Tedford saw him. So thank you for sharing that. Now, you also personally recruited Chasten West, who is a wide receiver on the Green Bay Packers practice squad. What can you tell us about young Mr. West?
You know, Chasten, he's a guy, he was so, mature when he came in to the program. I mean, he was a guy that, you have to understand a lot of things about, the landscape of recruiting out in the West. I mean, it's the Pac-10 is, kind of the cream of the crop, and everyone else is sort of fighting for the leftovers. And so, I guess to sort of break it down, it would be maybe if University of Wisconsin was going after, maybe the one of the top three receivers in Ohio, and he ends up picking University of Ohio over Wisconsin. I mean, it just wasn't expected that a guy the caliber of Chasten would pick Fresno State over Arizona State. I mean, you always look at kids too, maybe they end up at a Fresno State or a Boise State or San Jose State because of grades, or they didn't have something, but only a handful of times in my scouting at Fresno State did we go head to head against a Pac-10 school and win out, and Bernard Berrien was one of those, and Chasten West was another. And Chasten was a guy that Arizona State had recruited early on and wanted. He was an offer kid, and they felt that he was going to be the next Derek Hagan, who was a very fine receiver, who's drafted and basically holds all of Arizona State's wide receiver records, and they thought Chasten was going to be that guy, and he committed to Fresno State early on just because he liked the program, he liked what Fresno State stood for, he liked the focus on academics and things like that, and so he made that commitment. But Arizona State did not waver. I mean, they were in his house pretty much every week, and eventually got to the point where the head coach, Dirk Cutter at the time, who'd left Boise to go to Arizona State, came in the house and was sort of making the last push. It got to the point where, it actually got kind of nasty and adversarial. And things are going bad when a head coach starts, bad-mouthing another program. And the last thing he said to Chasten was, we'll have fun losing to San Jose State and left. So it was at that point that Chasten said, hey, you know what, I'm really glad that, I've made my decision. And he stuck by it, and then he came in, as a true freshman, was looking to make a real impact, and he got some playing time, and then eventually, down his career, he blew his knee out, and at that point, it was basically he was half the guy that he used to be. I mean, he went, he did the rehab and everything, he did what he was supposed to, but, I would say that he lost a good tenth off his 40 time after that, and just couldn't get it back, and that completely changed his game, and I mean, there was some talk of maybe turning him into a tight end or an H-back or something, but, it was just, perseverance, and he was a guy that probably should have hung it up, probably, should have gone on and done something else, but, he worked hard, he came back, and, he's not a starting NFL wide receiver, but, he's a guy that I think that the Packers feel is a good project. They recognize his work ethic, and if he can, maybe get with some NFL coaching, maybe, even possibly go in and clean the knee out at some other point, he can, maybe come back and at the very least be a James Jones type of guy. I mean, he's definitely, before he got injured, he was a potential high round draft pick, and now he's looking at possibly a possession guy, a role player guy, but definitely high character guy, and a guy that is never gonna do badly. I mean, he's never gonna go out and get drunk and get in a bar fight. I mean, he's a mm-hmm. I guess what McCarthy would call Packer people.
Thank you very much, Jerry, for coming on the show today and sharing all these you know, insights with us. I appreciate it again for, you know, waking up at this early hour to speak to us. Now, you also do, you're on, I believe, on radio out in California. Is it KYNO?
Yeah, kind of 940. It's a mixed format sports, local talk, political talk radio station, 50,000 watts, stretches based in Fresno, stretches from Bakersfield all the way up to Sacramento.
And it's podcasted too, so our fans could check that out, correct?
Yeah, and 940kino.com, or you can just Google, you know, 940 AM Fresno, and you can find it. I'm on every Tuesday at 6 o'clock, and the podcast is usually up later that night.
Sounds good, Jerry.
It's also live streaming.
Thank you once again for joining us and taking time out of your day. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Not a problem, Brian. I enjoyed it.
Take care. Jerry McCoon, college recruiting analyst on the West Coast, telling us some fantastic stuff. You know, we covered the information from the stars like Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews to the unknowns like practice squad wide receiver Chasten West. Stuff you won't be getting anywhere else but here on Cheesehead TV. And we thank Jerry McCoon for joining us and telling us all this. I'm going to podcast the show later today so I can listen to it again, so you can listen to it again. Feel free to tell your friends. That was some stuff you just don't hear everywhere. Like we said, we've heard the stories about Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews before, but to speak to somebody who's, you know, seen them before they were stars and getting the inside information, that's really special. So thank you once again, Jerry, and look for our podcast later today. Before we wrap it up on today's show, just want to get to a couple final pieces of information today. Aside from all the injury news, which is plentiful with the Green Bay Packers, there's an article, placed it on today's Packers Daily Links. You can see the words wide receiver coach Jimmy Robinson in big bold letters, and if you click the link in that section, it'll take you to an article in the Green Bay Press Gazette by Kareem Copeland, who spoke to wide receiver coach Jimmy Robinson of the Green Bay Packers, specifically about all the drops the wide receivers had this past Sunday. I believe the word is 7 drops, more than half of them by Donald Driver, veteran, dependable Donald Driver. And Mr. Robinson had some strong words. Says, quote, "This is the NFL. We're not in Little League. We should be the best that there are in this business. We didn't play like it Sunday." He's absolutely right. So many people, including myself, have called this one of the best wide receiver groups in the entire NFL. And they have not looked like it thus far. It's disappointing because Donald Driver has had such a great season coming into this game, coming into Week 5 against the Redskins. Really good stuff, you know, a guy who's just showing no signs of slowing down, and through the first quarter of the season didn't show those drops he was beginning to show last year even a little bit. And then Redskins game comes along and here they are. And James Jones with 2 drops of his own. One was kind of hard over his head. He did get his hands on it, and as the old saying goes, if you get your hands on the ball, you should catch it. And the great receivers do. But James Jones just can't seem to ever get over the top. He might be the best on the team this year at getting yak yards after the catch. He just seems to make a move, put a spin on, and use his strength to bully his way for a couple extra yards, you know, through early this season. But he just always has those mistakes that just can't get him over the hump to ever make you think he can be more than just a third wide receiver. And sometimes one that's a liability at that. You know, when you have fumbles like you did in the Chicago game that led to a loss. Or drops like you did in the Washington game. So really disappointing. You know, we talked about Aaron Rodgers with Jerry McCoon. Aaron Rodgers got a poor rating from Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel when he did his review of the film. Here's what Bob McGinn had to say about Aaron Rodgers. It says, quote, two of the four sacks and another knockdown were on Rodgers, either for running into them or holding the ball too long. He wasn't decisive or rhythmic. He putzed around in the pocket instead of just making the decision to scramble and go. It seemed that about one of every four of his passes were bad balls. And it was. I kind of wish that I had put in Aaron Rodgers in my reactionary chips report that I write immediately after every game. I had given cow chips to Donald Driver and Charlie Peppra, and while they probably deserve them, I think maybe Rodgers did as well. Maybe even more so than Charlie Peppra, I think. He just didn't have it. You know, and, you know, the drops, you know, had they been catches, certainly would have helped Rodgers' cause, no doubt. But, you know, he just can't get it done in close games. He has occasionally, but not often enough. You know, in overtime, he's having troubles. Of course, high-profile overtime game last year in the playoffs against the Arizona Cardinals. And then this one against the Redskins. And he just can't. You know, there's always a lot of talk about the best quarterbacks in the NFL and ranking them. Who are the top five or the top three? And Aaron Rodgers just isn't at the level yet where he can crack those top three. You know, you have to assume Peyton Manning, Tom Brady are the top two because of their Super Bowl wins. The way they've get the job done week in and week out on a yearly basis for seasons on end. And you got Drew Brees, while he had a poor game this past week, they're rare for him. And Aaron Rodgers, as talented as he is, as good as he is, just isn't in the level of those guys. Until he can start putting together overtime wins, fourth quarter comebacks, and eventually get a Super Bowl ring on his finger. And it might come. It could very well come. A lot of time left in the season. A lot of time left. 11 games left in this season. Which we tend to overlook because the expectations were so high for this team. I would like to see him turn it around sooner rather than later. I don't know how quick they can turn it around with all the injuries this team has. But if you want home field advantage in the playoffs, you gotta start winning now. Everybody wants those January games at Lambeau Field. And if the Packers want to be home in that time, they've got to start winning soon. Packer fan John asks, can Corliss step up while J. Mike is out? Andrew Corliss had a hell of a game in the passing game this past Sunday. Great. Really. I mean, Andrew Corliss in the passing game gets an A+ this past week. He's got work to do in the run game, as seemingly all the Packer tight ends do. He had a holding penalty. There was another, I believe, run in the fourth quarter where Corliss was lined up tight on the right side next to Blaga and had to get to the second level to get to one of the Redskins linebackers and just didn't get there, and that linebacker ended up tackling John Kuhn or something like that. So Andrew Corliss has a long way to go in the run game, and thankfully that's what they have Tom Crabtree for. But Andrew Corliss, I think, can definitely be a factor while JerMichael Finley is out in the passing game. You know, there's going to be a mistake or two here or there that the Packers are going to have to live with, just rookie mistakes, you know, brain farts, brain freezes that are going to happen sooner or later, and it's probably going to be really disappointing when it does happen. But I think they'll be in the minority based upon what I saw this past week from Andrew Corliss, just stepping up and really making some tough catches. You know, the one at the end of the game, at the end of regulation, to set up that possible game-winning field goal by Mason Crosby. And I believe Corliss's first catch of the game was along the sideline where he came back for the ball. That was really impressive. So yeah, I think Corliss can help this team, and the Packers were pretty smart to draft him. That's all the time we've got for today, folks. Great show today. I can't wait to get this podcast in and up so other people can listen to it. But thanks for joining me this morning, and we'll be back on Friday for another episode of Railbird Central. Lots happening here this week. Make sure to tune back in this evening for Packer Transplants at 8 p.m. Lambeau time. We're hopeful we'll have a player guest on. I'm very hopeful about that. I can't confirm it already, but stay tuned for that as we hopefully have a player guest on Packer Transplants tonight with your hosts Corey Behnke and Aaron Nagler. Come back Thursday night for Thursday Night Live on Cheesehead TV, our weekly chat where we talk about Packers and college football, as we talk about prospects for the NFL draft, and get a little preview of the opponent this week, the Miami Dolphins. Lots of great things here on Cheesehead TV. Once again, thanks again, everyone. Take care, and I will see you later.